Welcome to The Lorraine Murphy Show. I'm a mentor, four times author, leader of my Bold Darling Mastermind for female entrepreneurs, retreat host, and I've gotten to host this podcast for 5 years. As with all of my work, this show is to serve female entrepreneurs who want to optimize their energy and their mindsets in order to build the businesses and lives of their dreams. I've walked this entrepreneurial path for 11 years now, and I can tell you that there is a way to have a business you love and still have the space and time for all the other parts of your life that make you, you. Whether your number one priority right now is to scale your business, upgrade your finances, rediscover yourself, find more energy, get more organized, reconnect with yourself, or build a life and or business that's more aligned for you, or all of the above, I am here as your guide on the show to help you make it a reality. Listen in on my dulcet Irish tones as I share tales from the front line of my business and mentoring, behind the scenes insights on how I'm approaching life and business, and speak with brilliant expert guests. Search The Lorraine Murphy Show wherever you get your podcasts. A new episode drops every Friday. Subscribe to make sure you always catch the freshest episodes. Let's dive in to this week's show. Hello. Welcome to this week's episode of The Lorraine Murphy Show. I am really, really thrilled to be bringing you our special guest interview this week with Aaron Telford, who is the founder of Baxter Blue Glasses. Now, before we dive in, quick reminder of all the very, very exciting things that are coming up for the rest of the year. First of all, on the 31st of July, I am hosting my Bold Brilliance Strategy Retreat. That's happening in Melbourne. And then in October, I'm taking another amazing group to Bali. Cannot wait to do that already. And then in November, I'm hosting an Aussie retreat. So I had quite a few requests from my audience just saying, really, really want to come to Bali someday, but it's just not possible right now. Kids are too young, business commitments, financial investment, time away, overseas, all the things. So I am also hosting a retreat on the New South Wales Central Coast in November, which I'm calling Haven. Love the name. So that's all coming up. There are links in the show notes to all three of those very exciting events. All right, this week's episode. I have been a longtime fan of Baxter Blue Light Glasses. So I really, really loved having the opportunity to talk this week to its founder, Aaron Telford. Aaron founded the business 7 years ago using his background in product development and advertising to create one of the earliest blue light filtering glasses. In our conversation, myself and Aaron cover why blue light is so harmful for us, but also for our kids, how prevalent blue light is, and hint, it's not just in your screens. I didn't realize this. What your circadian rhythm is and how blue light disrupts it. What Aaron wished he had known when starting an e-commerce business, the marketing tactic that completely changed the game for the brand, the importance of educating your market and how he is still doing it 7 years later, and also how he has navigated a growing business alongside his family. So really excited to bring you this conversation with Aaron. If you would like to invest in a pair of Baxter Blue glasses, please do use my affiliate link because it will save you a whole 10% on everything you purchase. I'll pop a link to that affiliate link in the show notes for you as well. So let's bring on Aaron Telford. Hi, Aaron. Great to have you on the show. Thank you for joining.
Hey, Lorraine. Thanks for having me. Great to be on your show.
Oh, well, I've been a big fan of Baxter Blue I've probably had my glasses about 6 years at least.
Wow.
They're still going strong. So I'm a huge fan. So I've been really, really excited to unpack the story of the business with you. So thanks for joining me. So tell me, let's dive straight in. Why did you start the business?
How did and why and how? I suppose, look, my background, it was in creative. So back in the day before we started the business, so the business is now just gone 7 years old. We just had our birthday about a month or so ago.
Congratulations. That's an awesome milestone.
Yeah. And that was really cool. And so I had my own creative services business. I was within Warner Brothers.
Ah, okay.
Here in Australia. So we did all of the creative for all of Warner Brothers videos and video games and so forth and TV commercials, all of that type of thing. So a big team there in Sydney. But then back in 2016, they closed Warner Brothers down here in Australia.
So sorry, Aaron, when you part of was it an in-house creative agency or was it your own
Correct.
Agency and Warner Brothers?
It was my own in-house creative agency.
Got it.
within the Warner Brothers.
Amazing. But they closed it down then.
Yeah, and then it closed down. Distributorship went to another business here, like another big business that distributes all the videos and so forth.
Yeah.
So then myself and one of this MD of Warner Brothers and the CFO, we formed another distribution business. So then when we formed that, we were looking at we were distributing video games for Australia here for Warner Brothers. But then we had all these other things we wanted to do as well. So I was doing a lot of research at the time and spending a lot of time on product, looking at what we could distribute, what else we could do. And my background is in product development as well. So we're spending a lot of time sort of looking at what we could do. And then during that time, I was getting a lot of sore eyes and headaches and eye strain and so forth. I'd never spent so much time on a computer screen. Mm. So before that, when you've got a team of people, you're in meetings all the time. And
true. It's so true. Yeah.
So back to that, I was just by myself, well, within the small team, but I was on the computer all the time, and then started doing a bit of research into it and realized what I was getting was eye strain and digital eye strain. So at the time, I then went to one of the local optometrist chains, and they said, well, what we could do, we can offer you this thing called blue light protection, but it's going to cost you, I think it was going to cost like $300 for this pair of glasses. And it was like, wow, there's got to be a cheaper way to do this. Like,
and I can't imagine they were the sexiest looking glasses.
No. I mean, that's it. There's not a huge range, or there wasn't back then.
Yeah.
So what I did was then start going, looking into it and saying, well, there must be a better way to do this. And with my background in product development, I sort of started looking into it and then decided that, okay, we can produce our own range of glasses. And we kind of coined it at the time. It was for people that don't wear glasses.
Mm. Because
there's all these people that are wearing these glasses, but there's probably 70% of the people in the world don't need to wear glasses. Therefore, how are they going to protect their eyes from the blue light and digital eye strain they're getting from screens? So spent a lot of time and a lot of research up in China, because, as I said, I got the background up there, was up there doing a lot of work up there anyway. And then we developed our own proprietary lens, because what we wanted to do was sort of filter what we call a certain part of the blue light in the blue light spectrum, which was causing the digital eye strain.
Ah, okay. So there's different types of blue light. I want to ask you more specifically about blue light.
Yeah. Okay. So then we did that. And then what ended up happening from there, I sort of went to my business partners and we sort of said, this is a product we should be doing. And essentially we sort of agreed and parted ways quite amicably. We agreed to sort of disagree. And I said, okay, I'm going to go out and start this business. So hence Baxter Blue was born. So we sort of went out on a limb and sort of took a gamble, because blue light glasses back in the day, this is 7 years ago, weren't really a thing. There
were
people doing it. So, so we sort of went out and sort of launched an online business. Never had been in an online business before. Had to kind of learn all the ropes of starting your Shopify store and how to get traffic to your site and all of that. So it was...
So excited to unpack it with you. Well, on your travels, Aaron, when you were first identifying the problem with blue light, and obviously I would imagine it's a space that you keep a very close eye on now.
Yeah.
What is it about blue light that's so damaging for our eyes?
Blue lights, it's interesting. So blue light's in the sun. So blue light that is basically, so blue light is not necessarily all bad for you, particularly depending on the sources it come from. So blue light's in the sun. So blue light's basically what we call maintains your circadian rhythms, maintains your sleep-wake cycles. So when you wake up in the mornings, you actually want to be exposed to some of that sun. You want to actually be getting out and getting some of that really good blue light in the, well, it's more red light in the mornings, and then it moves into the blue light. You want to be exposed to that, because what that's doing, that's actually starting your body clock in the mornings. And then
if anyone listening hasn't heard of circadian rhythms, it's essentially your internal body clock, when your body expects to sleep, rest, eat, and so on. So that's why, you know, when we get jet lag, that's when our circadian rhythm is completely out of whack, because we're waking up when we should be falling asleep and so on. So just want to touch on that, Aaron, just in case people weren't familiar with that.
Yeah, no, absolutely. No, look, to be honest, a lot of people don't really know about it. So, and then, as the day progresses, and then when the night comes and the blue light and the sun goes down, that's when you're not wanting to be exposed to the blue light, because what the blue light does, particularly in the evenings, it's basically, if you're exposing yourself to this blue light in the evenings, it's actually tricking your mind into thinking it's daytime. So you're sort of there, sort of the lights have gone down low and so forth, but then you're on your device or you're on a laptop and you've got all the blue lights and so forth coming, because all of your LEDs, lights in the house as well. So that's
a really good point, Aaron, actually, that it's not just our screens like tablets, laptop screens and phones.
You
It's
don't.
actually the light in our LED, and the LED is the light of choice now, isn't it, for most people?
Well, LED is a light of choice basically for most people and for all businesses these days, because all the LED lighting is, it's energy efficient and it's cost efficient. So literally all lighting, or the majority of all lighting these days, is LEDs. Car lights are LEDs as well. So being exposed to this blue light, let's call it, in the evenings is not good. But then also during the daytime as well, when you're on your screens, you're being exposed to the artificial blue light. So when you're inside, as we are now, we've got all of this artificial blue light around us from the lights above us and from the screen in front of us. And what that's doing, that's causing digital eye strain, because what you're doing, your eyes are focusing on the screen, and it's actually, the screen's actually flickering. So you can't actually see the screen flickering, but when the screen's actually flickering, your eyes are trying to focus on this subconsciously. And what you're doing, your blink rates are dropping on your eyes. So you're not blinking as much as you should be doing either. So therefore your eyes are getting dry. You've heard of people getting dry eyes and so forth.
Yeah, that's
So
so
that.
interesting, because it's almost like the flicker is so fast that your eye can't detect it. Like,
You
on a conscious
can't.
level, you can't detect it. So I bought a new webcam. We lived in Spain for the year last year, and I bought a webcam. So I was my circadian rhythm was shot. I was
Yeah.
getting up at like 3:15 in the morning to be on Zoom at 4 a.m. like,
Oh, wow.
on with the big gaming light behind the screen and everything. Yeah,
Yeah.
crazy. Big
Yeah.
fun year, but crazy.
Yeah.
And there was a particular, when I switched on the LED lights in my office over there, the screen was really flickering. Like, with the new webcam, I thought it was the webcam, but it was actually, yeah, the LED was constantly flickering and the screen was constantly flickering.
Yeah,
That's really interesting, Aaron, because I actually only wear my blue light glasses early in the morning or at nighttime, but I should actually be wearing them all day then, should I?
exactly. Yeah, no, you should be
Interesting. I
wearing
didn't
them.
know that.
So
Okay.
no, I mean, look, it's, to be honest, it's more beneficial the whole time you're wearing them, but yeah, in the mornings, and in the evenings particularly, is when you want to be wearing them. So
Okay, good to know.
that's essentially, yeah, that's what happens, and that's why being exposed to this during the day, and what our glasses actually do then. And the way that the company was kind of born as well, I suppose, with the technology that we've got, there was a lot of the blue light glasses back, and blue light glasses have been around, the orange ones, like the
I want to
UVX
ask you about
and so
this,
forth.
yes.
So they've been around for a long time, but we sort of went out there and thought, okay, well, we need to sort of create this sort of range of glasses that people want to be wearing and be seen to be wearing, but are also filtering out what we call the harmful blue light. So hence, we developed this range of glasses, but also with the technology that we've got in there. So it's filtering out. And we say filtering, it's not blocking the blue light. If we were blocking all of the blue light, these would be red.
Yes, yeah. Because I've
So,
seen friends on Insta wear the really orange red ones,
yeah.
and fair play to them, but I'm too vain.
Yeah.
I love what you've done with Baxter Blue. That, yeah, they still look really cool. Like, you're obviously wearing yours now. I'm not wearing mine now because I didn't realize I need to wear them during the day, but they look
Yeah.
really cool. Like, they're just really cool. Like, yours are the strong black frame at the moment. They're awesome. Can you just touch on for a moment, why is this important for kids? Because obviously our kids are increasingly spending more and more time on screens. I find it mind-blowing. Not so much in this school that our daughter's just turned 7, the school she's in now, but in her school in Spain last year, a lot of their homework was even required to be done on screens, which myself and my husband absolutely hated. What do you think about blue light blocking for kids, and what should we be doing about it?
Well, I mean, firstly, with kids, it's only going to get worse, should I say. They're on screens. And I know you've got young children, but to be honest, the reality is, as they get older, they're just on them all the time. I
Yeah.
mean, my
Yeah.
kids are a little bit older than yours, and that's just the way, that's the world we live in. It was got to a stage where you sort of, if you can't beat them, you've got to join them, in a sense that when they're always on them. So, and I suppose, look, blue light, in a sense, can be damaging for the eyes as well. So there's lots of studies that have been done that it can actually damage your retina. Now, we're still very early on in this stage of the knowledge of what's happening, in terms of, we've only had digital screens for 15, 20 years, with the LEDs, or the phones, probably only, they're only just gone over 10 years old. So I think what's probably more frightening with the kids is that it can potentially, they're very early on, and when you're actually younger, your eye doesn't have as much, as we get older, the whites of our eyes get a bit more yellow. Therefore, we're building up a bit of resistance. And this is, this pigment that's actually in our eyes, we replicate that pigment and put it actually into our lenses.
Ah, interesting.
It
Okay.
filters out. So as you're actually older, whilst yes, you're still being exposed to the blue light, and the blue light is still giving you digital eye strain, when you're actually younger, you don't actually have that in your eyes. So therefore, you don't have as much protection. So kids should be wearing these glasses. So they're basically to be filtering this blue light from coming through their eyes.
Yeah.
Because we don't know. And there's research out there that says, yes, it can cause damage to the retina, but we haven't been around long enough to actually know what damage is actually going to be caused.
Yeah. It's like, well, essentially this generation, you know, you're and my generation is the guinea pigs, and then our kids are the next guinea pig generation coming up behind us, because they're digital first. Like they're absolute digital natives, whereas you and I weren't.
Yeah. And look, when we actually first started the business around about the same time, my daughter at the time, who was eldest daughter, she was about, I think, 11 or 10. She was getting a lot of headaches and so forth from being on her screens. And she was at a school where they had laptops. And we went to the optometrist and they actually prescribed her with some glasses, but they didn't actually put any magnification in it. They just put the blue light in it. We went, well, we actually can do that ourselves. So they were actually prescribing that at that site as well. So she put them on and it alleviated her headaches. So she wasn't getting headaches anymore. So some kids are more susceptible than other kids as well. So everyone's all built differently. So but I think it's really important. What's probably more important for kids is, yes, they need to be wearing them when they're on devices during the day, but in the evenings, because kids in the evenings, you know how hard it is, as I'm sure you do know, when you've got younger kids, to get them to sleep and to get them to get into bed at night. When they're actually being exposed to this blue light, it's just what we were saying before, it's tricking their mind into thinking it's actually daytime. So we need to be them wearing their blue light glasses. And if anything, we've actually got what we call our sleep range of glasses. So our sleep range of glasses for our kids actually have more of a tint in them. So they're a bit more yellow. So they're filtering out more of the blue light, which is what disrupts our melatonin disruption. Because what you want to be doing in the evenings is letting melatonin kick in and do its thing. Whereas essentially what's happening when you're exposed to the blue light in the evenings, it's stopping that melatonin production because it's tricking your mind into thinking it's daytime.
Interesting. Well, I just bought a pair for our three-year-old, the Baxter Blue. I don't know if I bought the same ones now or not. I got their little red frames. They're so cool. He looks so cute in them. I don't know if I got the sleep ones though.
Yeah, well, yeah, maybe they need. I mean, so ideally, I mean, my younger kids wear the sleep ones in the evenings. And so, well, we hope that it does. They get to sleep now and so forth.
Yeah.
It does definitely help them because it's filtering out more of that blue light in the evenings.
Yeah, interesting. So, and I was just thinking as you were talking about the LEDs, because I hadn't actually thought about that. I always associate the blue light with screens. My in-laws, when we go to their place, in our home, we have very like warm lights, like yellow lights, like bulbs and all of and we turn all the lights down at about 6:30. The lights at their house is almost dark at nighttime. We just got the salt lamps everywhere and like low lamps. But my in-laws' place, holy crap. We joke it's like walking into an operating theater. And they don't have, like, there's no dimmers, there's no lamps. It's like either nothing or everything. It's so hectic. I'm just thinking I need to wear my blue light glasses next time I go to their place because, yeah, I find a massive impact on my sleep as well because there's just no way of, even the bedside lamps are like super bright.
Yeah, exactly. And look
or else we just bring our own bulbs, either or.
I think what also happens is quite often you'll be in your environment in the evenings and you'll have all the lights down low. And then what happens is people then go to bed and they'll go and switch the bathroom lights on, switch all the lights on to get to bed. And then suddenly they're sort of wide awake and wondering why you're lying in bed and not being able to get to sleep. So
it's almost like this really gentle ease in we need to give ourselves, isn't it?
Yeah. No.
And can we talk about the business for a bit? So I'm fascinated to know, you know, what challenges you experienced in the early days of the business. And also, was this completely self-funded? Did you get investment? How did the whole setup work?
Yeah, completely self-funded.
Wow, so
that was probably one of the first challenges is, as I mentioned earlier, I went to China and we did a lot of due diligence and spent about 6 months developing our lens and our frames and looking at all the different manufacturers and then deciding on the manufacturer. And then we had to go and purchase them. And when you're in China, you have MOQs over there, minimum order quantities, which are rather large.
Yeah.
And you can't, when you're a small business, you can't say, just going to try out with 20 of this and 10 of that. You're ordering in the hundreds. And so it was a fairly big commitment that we made. So
yeah, that's why I'm so impressed. I've got a couple of my mentees, so my coaching clients who have manufacturing business and they manufacture in China. And yeah, that's impressive to start a manufacturing business self-funded.
Yeah. And I think you've just and we didn't know if it was going to work. We had a really good hunch it was going to. We'd done a lot of research and so forth into it, and we knew we were one of the first movers in the market back in the day, but there's no such thing as a sure thing, so we had to sort of trust our gut and go with it. So yeah, that was probably one of the first challenges. One of the other challenges was being a one-man band. So sort of starting the business and then learning it all. We had to learn. I didn't know what Shopify was.
Mm.
I didn't know how to advertise on Facebook. Who was I going to get to promote the business?
Yes.
What was Google? How did Google Ads work? So these were all totally foreign things to us. And I think also back in the day, 8 years ago, online businesses weren't as big as what they are now. There was still a lot around, but they've really come into the fore, particularly since COVID as well, where people
have
their own businesses. So, yeah, so it was a very steep learning curve, just getting to learn how to actually start your business and how to promote and so forth.
So what did you do, particularly around the tech side of things and the online marketing side of things? Did you hire? Did you find agencies? What did you do? Or did you learn yourself?
No. So we hired. So look, building Shopify stores are pretty easy to build. So, and they're even more so now than what they were then. So we did get someone to help us develop it, but you can go and build them now quite simply. They've got all these different themes and so forth. So it's quite, let's call it user-friendly for the amateurs.
Yeah.
But yeah, we basically found an agency. We had a lot of people sort of, we went out to them and pitching them. And there again, you don't know the questions to ask. So
exactly.
Coming at you saying, we do this and we do that and we'll get this ROAS, which is your return on investment and so forth. So we just went with people that we found were a good fit and then started advertising. And we were advertising a big $20 a day on Facebook.
Yeah.
And sort of just watching every cent and going, why haven't we made a sale yet?
Like,
But then, then it became sort of got a bit of a movement from there. So that was a challenge and learning how to do email. What's email? Why do you have to email people and so forth? So, getting your EDMs going. Other challenges we had were all the packing. So it's like, okay, how do we set this up? So.
And were you sending the orders yourself at home initially?
Yeah. So we started off for the first 2 years, I think, but we were in our own garage, the classic garage.
Yeah.
So every morning we have all the glasses stacked around the outside of the garage and then we'd back the cars out and pull the table out and pack them and so forth. And
love that, Aaron.
Then we were sort of cleaning the lenses and checking them and it was, it was a very, not tedious, it was super exciting doing it back then. Like you can imagine when your first orders are coming in and it's like you get one or two orders during the day and it's like the best day ever. So
special. Then,
yeah,
I find often in business, I also get to work with a lot of business owners as well with my business. But it's almost like you and I had a quick conversation before we hit record about trying to make the most of when our kids are, so young and trying to really appreciate it.
Yeah.
I think it's similar things happens in business where we're so focused on the next thing and the next thing and the next thing that I look back at the early days in both my businesses and I just think like the simplicity of it, there's a real simplicity and almost like an innocence to it.
Yeah. Yeah.
That maybe I didn't appreciate at the time because I was so focused on, okay, the next thing and the growth and all that. Did it feel, Aaron, in the early days, like it was an instant success? Like, did you find, because obviously you started this business on a hunch going, I think people will want this. Did you find that people did want it? Like, was the demand there?
In the first 6 months, it was a bit slow. And I was still consulting, doing creative work for the business that I was in previously. So that was great that we got to sort of have this balance there as well, consulting with them. It took a while to, as I said, it was getting the education out there and it's getting the word out there. I mean, you've got this, okay, I need to get my name out there, but then I've got to spend all of this money on Facebook. What's some other avenues I can actually get out there and promote this business without having to spend? And we were fortunate then that because we were relatively new, we thought of influence was just becoming a bit of a thing back then.
Yeah, perfect timing.
And so we were lucky where we were reaching out to a few influencers, but because we had these new things, and once we, which people hadn't heard about before, but people thought were cool, they're a fashion item, they were kind of like this, they were functional, but they're also fashionable. The influencers back then wanted to do something that was a bit different. So back then, Reels weren't even around on Instagram.
No.
I don't think stories were, to be honest. So it was all just static stuff. So we started getting influencers reaching out to us and saying, hey, could you send me a pair of your glasses and I'll do some posts for you. So that snowballed and started to get really quite big. And then we'd get people bigger and bigger, people with maybe 200,000 or 300,000 followers reaching out to us and saying, hey, we love your glasses. So I love your glasses. Can you send me a pair? So that was at around about that time was when it really started picking up.
Yeah, yes.
We then had a lady who you may know as a lady called Rachel Finch.
Yes, yeah.
So Rachel, who we went on to do a collaboration with as well and became a friend, but Rachel had bought our glasses and then just started wearing them. And then sales, Rachel's got this, an amazing person, and has got this, such an amazing sort of attitude to life, and just people just love her and the knowledge that she has on everything. So as soon as she started wearing these glasses and people started asking her what they were, then we started seeing it, traction pick up more and more and more.
That's
so
great.
Yeah, so
good.
that was when we sort of really realized the power of influencers and people out there, that these everyone out there wearing our glasses, and then it just kind of snowballed from there.
Yeah. Do you have an average customer, Aaron? Like, is there one particular segment that purchases most of your glasses, or is it quite spread?
It's fairly spread. It's probably 25 to 45-year-old, I'd say, but we sell quite a lot of reading glasses as well. So blue lights with readers, therefore people over 45 as well. So
yeah, interesting.
It's fairly spread, but I would say, well, probably, to be honest, yeah, probably 30 to 45 would be the average customer, I'd say.
Yeah, okay. And tell me, have you had issues with copycats then, given that you are earlier in the piece? So it's funny you mentioned influencers, because my first business was an influencer. It was the first influencer talent agency in Australia.
Yeah, yeah.
So when I started my business, there were probably after about 2 years, copycats, I'm not going to say copycats, but like similar businesses started emerging. And I think I counted 4 or 5 years into the business, it was about 20 different agencies doing similar to what we were doing. Did you experience similar in your industry?
Yeah, look, I think we did. What really took off was businesses that were already doing sunglasses, big businesses,
yes,
like all the big sunglasses businesses. And then they realized then there was an opportunity to move into something else they actually hadn't done before. So those businesses then started having blue light glasses, and it started going crazy. They already had this massive following for people, so it really helped them. And other smaller businesses as well, as I mentioned, I think Shopify, which is your platform by which you set your online shops up, that became quite a simple thing for people to sort of navigate and set their own things up. And they promoted, you can just start up a shop in 2 hours if you want. So then it became a lot easier. And there was a lot of people doing drop shipping as well, because then you can go to China at that stage and then drop ship from China or get short runs. So it became a lot more accessible with blue light once people realized that it was a bit of a thing. But there's also having the right tech within your lenses was actually going to work as well. So a lot of people didn't necessarily have that tech. We got the proprietary tech in ours as well. It was developed. So it's, yes, they may look good, but were they actually working with people?
And
a lot of people, that's why ours became so popular, because they worked, plus they looked good.
Yeah. Yeah. Gold. Thank you. What are 3 things you wish you had known before you started the business?
Big one was SEO.
Yeah.
Like, if I'd had my time again, because SEO is such a key thing, and no one tells you anything. So
it's such a dark art, isn't it?
It's such a dark art, but it's such a massively important thing. So yeah, we do have SEO now. SEO is very expensive, and SEO takes a long, long time to build up. Therefore, if we'd have implemented it back then, we wouldn't be, you'd be probably even further along in terms of our optimization that we're actually getting through our keywords and so forth in our rankings. Luckily, we sort of rank fairly highly in a lot of the categories we're in. But yeah, SEO, if I was to sort of pass on any advice to anyone in online business, is to basically start your business up and get SEO happening at the same time.
So what would you have done? Would you have gotten an agency? Would you have hired an SEO team member? What would you have done?
Yeah, I would have done that. I would have basically got a freelancer in, someone that actually knew about SEO, to write the copy that's on the website that's going to work. And that having the website set up with SEO is one thing, but then it's also the other thing, which is all doing the backlinking and writing regular blogs and so forth as well. So it's just getting these keywords out there. As you said, it's a dark art, something that I have an understanding of, but not an in-depth understanding of. So there's these experts out there which really have an understanding of how it works. And it's a long haul. It takes a few years to build it up. So it's not just something you're going to see the results of. And it's not cheap either.
Yeah, it's almost like compound interest, isn't it? The sooner you start, the quicker you start reaping the rewards. What else would you have done differently, or what else would you have known? We wish you had known.
I would have scaled Facebook a lot easier. Back then, Facebook was a lot cheaper and a lot easier back then.
Yes, oh my God, wasn't it?
Oh gosh, and so we weren't spending enough money. I mean, we were spending money, but we were getting all this other, let's call it free traffic as well. But if I'd known then what I knew now, I would have gone and scaled Facebook. So
yeah,
because it was incredibly cheap back then. You could target more people a lot easier as well. So yeah, that's it. Facebook's changed a whole lot since then. Probably another thing I would have learned about finance a lot more as well. Finance is, and getting a real understanding of how the business, it's all well and good, you've got these sales coming in so forth, but I don't think enough people, like particularly I didn't at the time, have an in-depth enough knowledge about finance and knowing exactly what the P&L is, how the P&L works and the details of how to sort of make the business work from there, and actually real costing what a sale actually costs you. How much does a sale cost and what are you actually making out of it? So that was something I wish I'd sort of learned a bit more then. But I think back at the time when you're running it and we were starting it ourselves and, well, myself, you're wearing many, many different hats. And it's
there's only so much bandwidth you have at that stage in the business.
Yeah, and that's not something... Yeah. At the time, it's not generating money for you. So you're just sort of doing stuff that's actually bringing the sales
in. Yeah, so true. It's so true.
So, yeah, you see.
You just want to make the money. You'll figure out how to manage it later.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. So, yeah.
And so how big is the team now? Like, can you just kind of give us a bit of overview of the org structure of the business?
Well, look, we're actually a relatively lean team. There's about three of us in the business, but we use a lot of contractors. So we actually,
Good, Aaron.
So, yeah, I wear many different hats, as you have to do, and we just contract to different people doing different things. So we have streamlined. We sort of went through COVID where we went up, and COVID was amazing.
I assume COVID would have been great for your business.
Well, it was, but it was scary at the time. I remember the first day it actually happened and we were all in lockdown. It's like, and where we were at the time, the office we had, and there was all these other businesses around which weren't closing down, but they couldn't do any work and they weren't getting any sales and so forth. And we went, oh, that's going to be us. Then suddenly you look and then one day sales are up, sales are going up. And it was insane. It was so ridiculous.
I can imagine because people aren't sitting in the office in meetings anymore. They're sitting in front of screens and going, shit, my eyes are like, I'm sitting on Zoom for 8-10 hours a day. So that makes complete sense.
Exactly.
It's so lovely to hear about businesses that did well during COVID, because I think the opposite is so often. My own husband's business was absolutely hammered. They had to close it down because of COVID. So I just really like hearing the good news stories from COVID businesses.
It was a time, we hate saying this, but it was a time we'd sort of, you'd go, whenever a lockdown happened, you'd see sales go up.
Yeah, I can imagine.
And then we come back out of lockdown, we go, no, we want to go back into lockdown again.
Yeah, yeah. But also I think your business falls into, and I would primarily say it's a health item, but it also falls into that little luxuries bucket as well. You know, they're not super expensive. It's something nice that you feel good wearing. So one of my mentees runs, well, it's multiple different revenue streams, but a lot of it's e-commerce, like beauty products, like spa products. And they just went gangbusters during COVID because people just wanted those little luxuries just to make themselves feel a bit better when they couldn't go out and eat with or see friends or do any of those things.
Yeah, exactly. And I think one thing that also helped us was they're a bit of a fashion item as well. So people weren't actually going into the office. They weren't seeing people. Therefore, they wanted to sort of, you can only sort of see from here up.
Yeah, yeah.
So they thought, okay, well, I can only change my clothes that much there, but maybe I can change my glasses so I can have a different pair of glasses. So
yeah, that's
sort of
true.
Found that people sort of had they'd have different glasses for different days of the week. So
I love seeing some of the stats from it was a Target release. I think it was Target in the US, and they were saying how like the sale of tops was like outstripping bottom halves like three times, because we were all just sitting in our tracksuit bottoms and a nice top. Oh, such another world. Crazy.
Yes. Yeah.
Can I ask, Aaron, so you shared at the start, so when you started the business, you had twins you've got four kids, so the youngest two are twins. They were seven when you started the business. How have you found managing the blend of the business with being a dad and home life and being a partner?
Yeah, it's a challenge. It's always, I think it's a challenge more to me than it is to anyone else. It's because you're always wanting to be there as the parent and always wanting to sort of do good by them and not to be seen. When you have your own business, you kind of seem to be working 24/7 and don't want to be one of these kids that when they get older, they go, oh, yeah, I never saw dad because he was always working. So,
that's every parent entrepreneur's worst nightmare, just saying that we never saw mom or dad because they were always working. Like, it makes me feel sick.
So I suppose it's, how do we sort of challenge it? I mean, I sort of manage it. I think it's just, I make sure I spend time with them. We always have a dinner every evening. I try to sort of, and particularly back in the day back in the day when we first started, it was actually not too bad because we were working back at home then.
Yeah, I'm thinking everything's centered around the same geographical location at least.
Exactly. So the kids' school, I was here in the mornings. The kids' school was two or three blocks away. So I was always here in the afternoons when they got here, got home and so forth. So I saw a lot of them back then. So that was not really an issue. And then it's sort of, as you then move into an office, and then you've got to make sure you pull yourself away. So whilst, yes, I'd probably be one of these at the office quite early, and we'll go in the office quite early after I've sort of done my other normal health routines in the morning, because that time they're not really missing you in the morning, because kids, as they get a bit older, they basically wake up, they're straight out the door, so there's not really spending a lot of time with them. But I do make sure I'm home in the evening to spend time with them then, and then maybe once they've gone to bed, then you sort of put yourself back in the office and start doing work back then. So it's a challenge, but it's one that I've really been sort of conscious of ever since and making sure I'm always there for them.
Yeah. Okay. Love that. Thank you.
Yeah.
I just want to touch on just probably one of my last businessy questions around educating the market and how important that has been. So when I started my first business, bloggers were like, they were kind of starting to become a bit interesting. I started that business in 2012. So 12 years ago. And it was at the very start, like blogging was starting to take off. Bloggers had like Twitter and maybe Facebook. And I had to spend the first 6 months, I would argue I spent the whole business actually educating the market on why bloggers were so important. I remember, oh my God, I did this presentation about my brand new business. It was maybe 2 months in to a major creative agency who you would know. And there was 25 of them in the room. And this guy just yelled from the back going, they should be called floggers, not bloggers. And it was awful. And this was something I had to push back on so much. Well, who's going to take these bloggers' recommendations seriously if they're just being paid? Like, surely they're just being paid and that. Yeah, conflict of interest, all that kind of thing.
Yeah.
How have you found that challenge of when it is a new product, like it's a new product, people aren't really that familiar with it? What levers have you pulled in order to educate your customer? Because obviously, if they don't understand it, they're not going to buy it. And yeah. I find this is a challenge a lot of entrepreneurs have. They're selling something that actually their target audience doesn't even understand yet.
Look, it's something that we're still doing now. It's what we have to do in our ads. I think we were lucky at the beginning because we were sort of one of the first players in the market. We got a fair bit of press coverage out there, like newspapers. We were on Channel 9 a couple of times because it was a new thing back then. They were out there talking about it. And to be honest, there was all these pessimists out there saying, oh, no, it doesn't work, or it's not this and it's not that. So they'd always come to us and say, why does it work? How does it work? And so forth to get our side of the story. So, yeah, so I think we were lucky from that sense that we could educate people in the broader spectrum of things out there. As I said, you're in Channel 9 and things, the Daily Telegraph and a few big publications were out there. And I think also how we actually also got out there and spread the word was through these influencers, because they were the ones, people that were reaching out and wanting to wear our glasses because they'd seen amazing things and seen how they work. They would be out there going, these things work. Like I'm wearing them, this is how they work. So we kind of had this mini sales team in a sense out there.
Yeah. People that's as well. Such a good way of putting it. Yeah.
So, yeah, that's kind of how we got out there. I think, funnily enough, our ads are quite a lot different now to what they were back then. The ads back then were sort of like people wearing glasses and someone wearing a different pair of glasses and people and a nice little caption on the ad, and that would just sell the glasses, whereas now that doesn't work. Now you actually have to get out there and be factual and sort of give education and teach people about them and even link people to blogs on our website where they can actually learn more about them and how it actually works. So I think it's...
Do you think that's coming from a place of there's more competition in the market, or are we just as a society getting more cynical to health claims?
I don't think it comes down to the competition. It comes down to people actually understanding what they are and people. We've got a problem solution type scenario. So our product, our glasses, and many of our other new wellbeing products we've got out there are very much what I call these aha type products. Like people will be out there because, as I did, I just assumed that you got sore eyes and headaches from being on a screen all day was just what you were, that's just what happened. So you sort of come back from work after a day with headaches and sore eyes, but that's just what's happened from being on computers. When I realized that there was a solution to that, it was like, wow, okay, wow, there is a solution. So it's educating people that A, there's a solution and this is how the solution type works.
Yeah, yeah, so true. So I think, yeah. And I just want to touch on something you shared there, because my business was first to market. Your business was, it sounds like, first to market as well. I think a lot of business owners can be scared to start the business because they don't want to be first. And I had this amazing fortuitous experience where I actually needed to get my Australian residency before I could start my business because I was sponsored by a company to be here. I used to work at Naked Communications, which I think you might be familiar with. I was there for a couple of years before I started the business. And did the application for the residency, and I thought it would take 9 to 12 months. That's what the immigration department website said. And by some stroke of all I can say was like universal luck, I got it approved within a month. So I actually started the business almost a year earlier than I thought I would.
Oh, wow.
And I'm so glad I did, because so many people said to me over that 12 months, I had that exact idea. And I said, well, why didn't you start it? And they said, well, because you already did it. So I guess what I'm saying is, in a very long-winded way, don't be afraid of being first to market, because once you are first to market, you will always be first to market. And as you've experienced, Aaron, there is a lot of attention that you can get by being first to market, which then gives you the platform to educate your customer and explain why it is you're doing what you're doing and why it works.
Yeah, totally agree.
And it sounds like you very much formalized. I know affiliates is a huge part of the Baxter Blue sales process. Is that correct?
Yeah, look, we're fairly select with who we sort of work with. This is because we're getting a lot of people reach out to us all the time asking, can they work with us? Can they be an affiliate, like in all different channels? We are fairly select with who we work with because it's the brand that we're as well. So someone who's talking about us is also a reflection of who we are.
So true. Love
so
that.
It's quite important to make sure that we're sort of aligned from that point of view. And so, yeah, so we have affiliates. So I think we're sort of moving more now into the health and wellness space. We've always been in health and wellness, but we've really gone into the health and wellness and digital health. We've sort of gone digital health now. We've gone into health and wellness as well.
Love that.
With that, so it's important that we sort of work with and partner with people that are in that same space as well, and also have a great reputation in that space as well.
Yeah. Well, I'm very honored because I am an affiliate, so I didn't know it was such a tough gig to get. So thank you. I feel very special. Amazing. Okay, well, I'll obviously put my affiliate link in the show notes for this as well, so people can grab that. And what is one thing you would like people to take away from our conversation today?
I would take away, I think persistence pays off. You know,
I love that.
I think it's tough out there at the moment. Like the business, yes, we've got a reputation out there, but this cost of living crisis that we're all in and the media keeps on telling us about and then telling everyone out there that it's tough out there at the moment, so people believe that as well. But I think, yeah, you've just got to keep on persisting and persisting. Nothing comes easy. If it was easy, everyone would be doing it.
I can't tell you how many mentees I've said that to. They're like crying down the Zoom. Like, if it was easy, everyone would be doing it.
It's tough. And there's different challenges all the time. So I think people say that all the time, but persistence does pay off and you've got to be persistent. And I think it's also thinking outside the box would be the other thing, is like, think about different ways that you can maybe do something that someone else isn't doing that. So to sort of get your brand, whatever your sort of key niche may be, is think out something that's outside the box to sort of promote it more as well.
Amazing. Thank you so much. It's so great to see good people doing well in business. I love this story. Thank you.
Thank you. Yeah, really nice to chat with you. Thank you. Thanks.
We're excited to continue following the Baxter Blue journey. It sounds like there's lots more in the pipeline as well.
Certainly is. Excellent.
Thanks, Aaron.
All right. Thanks, Lorraine. Take care.
I so hope you enjoyed myself and Aaron's conversation. Hopefully it shed a bit more light on Blue Light for you, but also shared the backstory of building a brand like Baxter Blue and what it has required to get it to where it is now. Quick reminder that if you do want to invest in your own blue light glasses for yourself and for your family, please do use my affiliate code. It's in the show notes and it will save you 10% on all Baxter Blue products. Quick reminder again, I'm coming to Melbourne. Bold Brilliant Strategy Retreat is happening on the 31st of July. Bali Retreat's happening in October. And my Centre Coast Retreat, Haven, is happening in November. So links to all the things in the show notes. As always, thank you so much for listening. Please do drop me a note on Insta through DM. Let me know what your biggest takeout was from today. And also, if you have any special requests for what you would like me to cover in future episode. Always, always love hearing from listeners. So lots of love, and I'll chat to you again next week. I loved having you join me for this week's episode. Please do connect with me on Instagram at Lorraine Murphy Mentor and visit my website lorrainemurphy.com.au for tons of free resources and my reading list of all my favorite books. It would mean the absolute world if you could subscribe and share episodes you love with those that you love. Thank you for listening.